Welcome back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, recently the World Health Organization declared that the radio frequency electromagnetic fields emitted by cell phones could be, quote, possibly carcinogenic to humans, end quote, based on an increased risk of glioma in heavy users, after reviewing details from dozens of published studies. The statement was issued in Lyon, France, by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, the cancer arm of the World Health Organization, after a week-long meeting of experts. They reviewed possible links between cancer and the type of electromagnetic radiation found in cell phones, microwaves, and radar. The group classified cell phones in a category called 2B, meaning they are possibly carcinogenic to humans. Other substances in that category include the pesticide DDT and gasoline engine exhaust. Now the assessment will go to the WHO and to national health agencies for possible guidance on cell phone use. But in light of all of this, what are we, the average daily cell phone user, to do? Well, joining us this morning to help sort this out is Dr. Richard Sills, professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, specializing in pediatric hematology and oncology, and the director of the Center for Children's Cancer and Blood Disorders at Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Sills. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, should we worry? What does all this research mean?
Well, we should always worry, and we should always be careful, but we also need to put this all into perspective. It is really not clear that cell phones are carcinogenic. As a matter of fact, for all of you people who want to give up your cell phones, you better give up coffee, because coffee has been classified also as possibly carcinogenic. As a matter of fact, I think of some 900 substances that were evaluated by the World Health Organization. Only one has really been declared probably not carcinogenic.
Wow.
So there is some potential risk. These studies are very, very difficult to do and very, very difficult to interpret. The only way you can really know that there's a risk is to put a human being in cage one without a cell phone, put a human being in cage two with a cell phone, let them stay there for years and precisely measure their cell phone use. It's not going to happen. The increased risk of possible cancers, gliomas, and benign tumors called acoustic neuromas may be twice the risk. And that sounds scary. Maybe I'm increasing my risk twice. But in the largest cell phone study, the risk overall of cancer actually decreased in cell phone users, which of course really makes no sense. It really raises the question, something's wrong here.
Yeah, it strikes me though, in a many, many types of scientific research, especially around health issues, there are often these kinds of equivocal findings, but also, more importantly, one year they'll find something is kind of carcinogenic, and the next year they'll suggest it's good for you. For example, you mentioned coffee, and I can remember probably within the last decade, there have been so many different stories about, drinking coffee, as some of them were suggestive of being cancer preventative, I thought.
I mean, this is why this is such a difficult area. And I think there's some prudent steps. I think we should be more careful with our children because they have thinner skulls, and whatever the small amount of electromagnetic radiation is moving into the brain, it's going to move more into a child's brain. I think it's reasonable that you hold the cell phone a little further away from your ear. Some people will say use a wired headset rather than a Bluetooth headset.
Why is that?
Certainly not an expert in this area, but I think it's because the wireless headset doesn't put any radiation. The Bluetooth has a little bit of radiation, but it's into your ear, so it's actually getting closer to the brain.
So the proximity is right there.
Is right there. Mm-hmm. But everybody has to put this into perspective. And one way to do it is ask yourselves, have you ever allowed yourself or your children to get in a car without belting their seatbelt? Or have you ever allowed your child to, or yourself, to ride a bike without a bike helmet? And the answer probably 98% of the time is, yeah, I've done that. Well, I think when you've done that, you've taken an astoundingly greater risk of harming yourself than from using a cell phone, even if there is a doubling in the rate of gliomas, and I think that remains to be proven. These are extraordinarily rare tumors, so the amount of potential risk to any user is really small.
And you had mentioned actually before we started the interview an interesting fact in terms of what other things fall in that category. And besides coffee, you said there were pickled
vegetables also
fall in. So you'd have to stop
eating.
Those
who like kimchi, give up your kimchi too. And I think everything requires some prudence. I mean, cigarette smoking, there's no question. This is a huge carcinogen. It is responsible for the deaths of millions of Americans. But everybody knows that, and we have enough trouble getting that under control. I doubt everybody's going to give up their cell phones, and I think some prudent usage, but panic just isn't called for yet.
And in fact, isn't there a higher risk with the use of cell phones of car accidents, especially of late with the texting that's going on?
There's no comparison. I mean, when you're using, even with, a legal hands-free set, there is no question that most of the risk of your causing an accident isn't coming from the fact that you're using your hands, it's coming from the fact you're distracted. And that's different from texting, which is astoundingly high risk because then you're actually taking your eyes off the road. But even using a hands-free set, not using your hands, the risk of getting into a car accident is greatly increased over someone who is not using a phone.
And you mentioned earlier that the only way you could definitively determine this would be to basically isolate two individuals, one with, one without, and study them over a long period of time. Are there other barriers to that, to research in terms of determining this?
Well, you can do epidemiologic studies and prove things without isolating people, in cells. I mean, clearly with tobacco, once good studies were done and not industry studies, the risk becomes very clear. But then you're getting what's called a risk factor of 5, 10, 20-fold increase of death. I mean, that's easy to prove. Here we're talking an increased risk that is so small that and not reproducible in every study that it just raises into question how significant is this yet. We need more studies. I think everybody agrees we need more studies in children because their exposure is starting early. I think it calls for some prudence. Other things you can do is avoid holding a phone close to your ear when you're in a more rural area where the towers are separated because the phone puts out more power to connect.
Well, that's an interesting fact.
In those areas. Anything that increases the level of the phone picking up, I think when you switch from tower to tower as you're moving, there's actually a stronger signal.
Yeah, I think one of the great things that one of the most difficult things for people to know is that all these kind of frightening things that come out and warn us. For example, how to react to them. Years ago, I can remember there was all this talk, and you obviously as a pediatric person would know that all this information that came out about cell phone towers or electromagnetic towers, there seemed to be an increase in cancer in children who lived near to these. Was that ever
proven? No one today really thinks there was significant evidence to document that. It created a similar kind of, I don't know if I want to use the word panic, but similar levels of concern. The studies were inconsistent, and more studies were done, and ultimately nobody ever felt convinced that there was a risk.
It's interesting because there seems to be this kind of sensitivity or this boogeyman notion of electromagnetic fields. Do we have any models that suggest that those really do cause cancer?
The issue here, there are some animal models, and I'm certainly not an expert in this area.
Sure.
And it depends on the strength of the radiation. My understanding is the cell phone radiation is a much lower degree of radiation. But even with the huge electric towers, no one has ever proven that risk was real.
It's interesting because I can also remember for the last several decades people talking about microwaves as being potentially hazardous. Similarly, things like electric blankets were suggested. Don't leave your electric blanket on all night, that kind of thing. Do you think there's any truth in any of those things? Do you have any knowledge?
The answer is there may be, but it's very hard to prove. And maybe the bottom line in this is the use of cell phones has become astronomic. The incidence of brain tumors has not increased. So you would think if there were a clear relationship, and of course one could argue that it takes years for these cancers to develop, but you would think with this exploding use of cell phones, we would see an increase in the incidence of brain tumors. And no one has documented that.
It's very, very interesting. And I think that's probably the most kind of reassuring fact that, as you said, there hasn't been that concomitant increase. What if you were just going to kind of advise parents, because obviously with kids starting to use cell phones and they are they're the developing brains, everything is kind of, has some degree of plasticity and more receptivity to, I would think, environmental impact. What would be your recommendation to parents in terms of cell phone use for kids?
Well,
frequency.
Position and how often it should be using it. One could raise a question of, what's going to be the impact on our kids whose main means of communication has become texting as opposed to verbal speech. I mean, kids who never get on a telephone and talk to each other, but are using their fingers to communicate. What's that going to do in the long run? I think there's lots of reasons why we should be careful. Kids, walking down the street using their phone and they're texting all the time because this is what they do much more than adults do. Adults more often tend to use the phone to speak. The kids, they're all texting, which is much more dangerous.
Yeah.
So I think it's moderation without panic.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, you wouldn't recommend that a parent say a kid can't have a cell phone till age 16. I know that there were some organizations that have recommended that.
Yeah, there's no way to answer. There's really
yeah,
no
I
way.
Was just really.
Yeah, there's no way to answer it. But I think to tell kids they can't have cell phones till they're 16 at this point.
It's a losing battle,
it's a losing
I would think.
And, there's lots of safety reasons for kids to have cell phones to be able to communicate with their parents. I think the risk is probably, if there is a risk, it is very small, and we take lots of other risks every day that are probably much, much greater that we don't think about.
Do you expect that there'll be any recommendations that will come forth from the WHO? I know we are waiting for them to kind of, and some of the other World Health Organizations are going to weigh in on these findings. Do you expect that we'll have any other
prohibitions? I'm not sure. I think this is a low risk. I think they've made their statement. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with manufacturers who I think are already starting to put little pamphlets in their phones telling you about proper cell phone usage, and that's fine. I think we need to keep studying it, but I think these risks have to be kept in perspective that they are, if they are there, they're relatively small.
Well, Dr. Richard Sills, professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University, specializing in pediatric hematology and oncology, and the director of the Center for Children's Cancer and Blood Disorders at Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital. Thank you so much for coming in today. I think you've probably reassured a lot of us out there who are getting a little nervous about very clear statement that they made. Well, we've got to take a short break. We're going to be right back, so please stay right there. There's more HealthLink on air ahead. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.